My name is Nikki Strong, playing you the pop music you love on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, we'll be joined by John Russell, Brian Lynn, and Jill Robbins. They will tell us about marijuana usage in the United States, a scientist in Cuba who is working to raise silkworms, and new money for college athletes in the U.S. Then I have a story about the summer insect count in Germany. And Anna Mateo helps us close the show by discussing the phrase breaking the mold in this week's Words and Their Stories. And Anna joins me to talk about some notable people who have broken the mold. Now, here's John.
For the first time, the number of Americans who use marijuana almost every day has grown greater than the number who drink alcohol almost every day. This change, some 40 years in the making, comes as marijuana use has become more common and legal in nearly half of U.S. states. In 2022, an estimated 17.7 million people reported using marijuana daily or near daily. In comparison, 14.7 million people reported being daily or near daily drinkers, an examination of national survey data shows. In 1992, when daily pot use hit a low point, less than 1 million people said they used marijuana nearly every day. Alcohol is still more widely used. But 2022 was the first time this high level of marijuana use overtook daily or near daily drinking, said the study's writer, Jonathan Calkins of Carnegie Mellon University. A good 40% of current cannabis users are using it daily or near daily, a pattern that is more associated with tobacco use than typical alcohol use, Calkins said. The research, based on data from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, appeared recently in the publication Addiction. The survey is a highly regarded source of self-reported estimates of tobacco, alcohol, and drug use in the United States. From 1992 to 2022, the per capita rate of those reporting daily or near daily marijuana use increased by 15 times. Calkins suggested in the study that people may be more willing to report marijuana use as public acceptance grows. Most states now permit medical or recreational marijuana, though it remains illegal at the federal level. In November, Florida voters will decide on a constitutional change permitting recreational cannabis. And the federal government is moving to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug. Research shows that high-frequency users are more likely to become addicted to marijuana, said Dr. David A. Gorelick of the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Gorelick was not involved in the study. The number of daily users suggests that more people are at risk for developing problematic cannabis use or addiction, Gorelick said. High-frequency use also increases the risk of developing cannabis-associated psychosis, a severe condition where a person loses touch with reality, he said. I'm John Russell.
You just heard the Health and Lifestyle Report from John Russell. He joins us now to talk more about the story. Welcome, John.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
In the report, you mention medical and recreational uses of marijuana. Could you explain that point a little more?
Sure. Recreational means done for pleasure or enjoyment. Medical means done for health reasons, often under the supervision of a doctor or other health professional.
And what might those health reasons be?
There are medical reasons to use marijuana. Harvard Health, for example, notes that the most common use for medical marijuana is pain management. Harvard Health notes that marijuana is safer than drugs called opiates. In addition, marijuana might help relieve pain for some people who have kidney problems, ulcers, or GERD. People who suffer from those conditions often cannot take other kinds of pain relievers, such as Advil or Aleve.
Yeah, John, that's a good point. People who can't take those medications or have some health problems, they definitely should have a second option. Thanks for coming on the show to talk a little bit more about your story.
Thanks for having me on the show. See you next time.
A scientist in Cuba is raising silkworms native to Asia in hopes the creatures will produce local, high-quality silk for clothing. Deron Martin is a biochemist who lives in western Cuba. He carries out experiments at the Indio Hatway Experimental Station. The research center was established in 1962 in an effort to improve agriculture production methods in the Caribbean nation. A reporter from Reuters news agency recently visited Martin's laboratory. As he looked over a table of many silkworms, he explained that he oversees the whole lab operation from start to finish. This includes raising the silkworms, also known as caterpillars, producing their food and harvesting their silk. As part of his work, Martin heads the Artiseda project. He told Reuters the project has progressed well so far. The goal is for Martin to harvest high-quality white fibers that can be used by the local population to make clothing and possibly other products. Martin described his work as a Chinese ancestral process that has been practiced for more than 5,000 years. He said it was only recently brought to Cuba. Martin said he does not have to go far to get materials for the caterpillar's food. He mainly uses dark green mulberry leaves from plants growing outside his lab. The worms need very specific conditions, he added. The project began with financial support from the European Union and the Cuban government. It more recently also received money from the French government. The effort aims to teach artisans the process so they can learn to raise worms on their own. Cuba was chosen because of its climate. The country has warm temperatures and a lot of wind. In addition, its growing season lasts the full year. Silkworms are the young form of a kind of moth native to Asia. The caterpillars produce a cocoon of silk fiber that has long been used to manufacture many kinds of products. The artisans can use silk to create products at home to sell to local people and visitors, said Dolji Chaviano. She owns a small shop in Havana that produces beauty products, fabrics, and other materials. Chaviano told Reuters she recently got approval from the local government to raise mulberry trees and silkworms in Havana. This will permit her to produce her own material for products. "Every day I discover something new to do with the silk," Chaviano said. I'm Brian Lynn.
How many insects can you count in 1 hour? That was the question being asked by a group of environmentalists outside of Berlin's Natural History Museum recently. The Nature and Biodiversity Conservation Union, or NABU, is asking regular people to help count the insects they see in any 10-meter area available to them. NABU organizes Insect Summer. It is now in its 7th year. The effort is a way to follow the movements of insects such as aphids, ladybugs, and bees. Laura Breitkreutz is an expert on insects and biodiversity at NABU. She said the project helps scientists observe the effects of climate change. We have seen that a few insects that normally occur only in the south might be spreading further north, she said, noting the appearance of the violet carpenter bee in Germany. The Citizen Science Project aims to give researchers information. It is not like precise scientific observations. However, the discoveries of regular people can give formal researchers unexpected insights. From bees to butterflies, scientists consider insects an important part of the ecosystem. They are important to pollination, the food chain, and keeping soil productive. In recent years, for example, scientists have expressed concerns about what appears to be a decrease in the bee population worldwide. The drop in some kinds of insects is often blamed on human causes, including chemicals and damage to the environment. Breitkreutz said the Insect Count project helps the scientists, and it also helps people respect the role insects play in their daily lives. It's very important for us to show people how important, great, and interesting insects are, she said. Breitkreutz said, some people lack knowledge of what is crawling around outside. The first insect count is happening until June 9th, and the next one is from August 2nd to 11th. The NABU provides a document to fill out and an app for the citizen scientists to report their findings. I'm Dan Friedel.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association, NCAA, and the five biggest college sports conferences recently agreed to pay almost $2.8 billion to settle claims from college athletes. The NCAA is the organization that runs college sports in the United States. It oversees about 500,000 college athletes from some 1,100 schools. The claims came up over the past 10 years. The legal files argued that the NCAA and the conferences prevented college athletes from making money while playing sports for the schools.
The agreement calls for the NCAA and the conferences to pay $2.77 billion over 10 years to more than 14,000 former and current college athletes. The settlement still needs approval from a U.S. federal judge and different parties to the legal case. If it is approved, students who play sports for their colleges will be permitted to be paid, like professional athletes, directly by the schools. Under current NCAA rules, college athletes, also known as student athletes, can only receive payments from outside groups that use their names, images, and likenesses in commercial efforts, such as advertisements. In a statement, NCAA President Charlie Baker and the school representatives said the agreement was an important step in the continuing reform of college sports. Steve Berman, a leading lawyer in the cases, said with the settlement, college athletes are finally able to receive a fair share of the billions of dollars of revenue that they generate for their schools. Ramogi Huma, a strong supporter of college athletes' rights, played football at the University of California, Los Angeles, in the 1990s. He called the decision groundbreaking, adding that there's no going back from there.
Although the decision provides a reason for celebration for some current and former students, it leaves more questions for others. Earlier in 2024, members of Dartmouth College's basketball team voted to join a labor organization called a union. The move means that the student athletes on the team could have the right to negotiate a working contract like other university employees. Chris Peck is the leader of the union that represents the Dartmouth basketball players. He criticized the decision to settle by calling it a workaround. Peck noted that the agreement calling for universities to share money from television deals and ticket sales with athletes does not answer whether students who play sports are school employees. The union wants a clear answer. Are students who play sports employees, or are they more like those who participate in non-study activities, like singing in a group?
Dartmouth has yet to accept the students' union vote, and the NCAA is asking the U.S. Congress to step in and say student athletes are not employees. Tim Walton coaches the women's softball team at the University of Florida. The school belongs to one of the large conferences that will have to pay millions of dollars into the settlement. Walton wants to know what will happen to sports like women's softball that do not bring in money like men's football or basketball. He asked, are they dropping programs? Are they dropping sports? In addition, there is a law in the U.S. known as Title IX that requires women and men to have equal rights in education. Does the law require female student athletes to get paid like men? Michael LeRoy is a sports law professor at the University of Illinois, He said there will be a concern if women get shortchanged.
Christina Stylianou is a sports lawyer in New York. She and Leroy both said regular payments from universities to students will make it easier for the students to argue that they are indeed employees. Leroy said the NCAA would like to be able to pay student athletes, but not consider them employees. That, he noted, would mean the NCAA is going to be treated differently than any other business in America. You cannot have separate pay. But one college softball player, Tiare Jennings of the University of Oklahoma, did not seem too concerned about the legal questions. She was celebrating the fact that she might have some money saved after college. She said it will be nice for players to know they have money to, in her words, kickstart your life. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Today, we talk about making things. When you make things using a mold, the material takes the shape of the mold, and everything comes out the same. So if you have a mold of a duck and put clay inside it, you will have a lot of ducks made out of clay with the same shape. They will look exactly like each other. Now, if you break the mold, you have to shape the clay by hand to make one duck at a time. As a result, all of the handmade ducks will look different. Each one is special and unique. That is where we get the expression, to break the mold. The dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster says, to break the mold means you do something in a completely new way. Those who break the mold usually try to find new ways to deal with a problem. They do things differently from what has been done before. They try new methods and do not follow what is usually done. We also call these new ways and methods fresh, one of a kind, or novel. For example, after a toy company lost money for 3 straight years, the owner tried something completely different. She asked young children to develop new toys for the company. And it worked. The new toys sold very well. So we say she broke the mold of toy development by asking children, instead of experts, to design new toys for the company. We also use this expression, to break the mold, to describe a very unusual or admired person. Let's look at the story of Barack Obama, the 44th president of the United States. His father was a black man from Kenya. His mother was a white American from the Midwestern state of Kansas. By 2009, only 5 black Americans had ever served in the U.S. Senate. Yet Obama defeated all other well-known candidates to become the first black American president in the country's history. Even those who did not vote for Obama agreed that he broke the mold. The expression is usually used to praise someone, but people sometimes use it to describe someone a bit unusual as well. Used this way, we might say, well, they certainly broke the mold when they made her. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Do you have a similar expression in your language? Or do you have an expression or idiom you would like us to explain? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. Ana is here now to talk with us about the latest words and their stories. Hi, Ana.
Hello, Dan.
Ana, why don't you remind everyone what phrase we're discussing?
This week, we are talking about breaking the mold. This is a phrase we use when we are discussing something that is special and unique, and sometimes maybe a little odd.
Yes, it is a popular phrase. I often hear people use it when they're talking about young athletes. They will say, this basketball player broke the mold. That is, they can do something that those who came earlier could not.
Who is someone who has broken the mold in professional basketball?
Well, I guess I would start with Michael Jordan, then go on to LeBron James, and maybe now people would say the French player, Victor Wembanyama, has broken the mold because he is so tall and so athletic.
Well, I have heard of all those players, for sure. They are special and unique. We can also call them fresh, one of a kind, and novel.
Those are all good expressions our listeners can use. Ana, who is someone that you look up to for inspiration? Who might be considered a mold breaker?
For me, a good example of someone who broke the mold is Julia Child. She did not start her on-air presenting on television until she was in her 50s. And also, she taught French cooking to the American public in a very relaxed and natural way with humor. And at that time, that simply was not done. So she definitely broke the mold of television presenting. When you break the mold, you do something differently than others before you.
That's a great choice, Ana. We all love Julia Child, and we know how she broke the mold. She also worked with molds, I'm sure, in her cooking. Ana, there are probably a lot of unknown people out there who have broken the mold. They do something different, but it doesn't lead to success. We mostly hear about those special, novel people when they go on to be a great success.
That is true. I think the phrase is most often used as an expression of admiration for someone who did their job or lived their life differently. Maybe they created a new product or they came up with a new singing style. They did something different that was not done before them. However, we do occasionally use it to talk about someone who may be a bit strange or odd. For example, if you meet someone who is a little odd, you can say, well, they really broke the mold when they made her.
That's true. Well, Ana, it's been nice talking with you this week. I think some might say you're our very own mold breaker here at Learning English.
Aw, thanks, Dan. You made my day. Have a good one.
That's all the time we have for today. It's always great to have Ana on the Learning English Podcast. Thanks again to Ana and all our VOA colleagues who helped produce today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening.
Be sure to join us again tomorrow for more stories from around the world, including a report from Brian Lynn about volcanic activity on Venus. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.